Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 157.
This week on the podcast, sadly, Dennis Hastert's attempt to rid the nation of corrupt legislators in the Clinton years was always destined to be incomplete, because he was one of them.
And not even a clown car can contain the current GOP field. And evidently the Democratic Party can't contain their candidates, since none of them are actually members.
Will the Bidens ever catch a break, for God's sakes?
And jobs. We've got more of them than we used to.
Patriot Act, we have less of it than we used to.
And the Duggars go on television to further explain their terrible choices and further embarrass their daughters.
A rare super combo of snakes and sinkholes strike this week's news.
And Mike Huckabee, this guy.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Why did it sound like you said too many W's to me? You didn't at
I
all.
Didn't. I said the right number of W's.
You did.
There's one thing I know. It's how many W's are in a web address. World Wide Web. That's
right.
Three of them.
I know. We're back.
We're back. We're coming at you after a very exhausting last week.
Right.
I almost died last night. On a flight back from New York, in that there was the worst turbulence I can remember.
Right.
Brent almost died in that he biked here from San Francisco last week.
That's right.
That was...
Two very different death experiences.
Brent, ultimately, I think, more exhausting than mine. But it, for a while, was a close... I was running a close second.
And I signed up to do it again, mysteriously.
Brent is... so impressionable sometimes. I just know what happened was that you were on that
ride.
You
get caught up in it.
And you were
emotional.
Like, yeah.
I was...
And you love like a good like crowd experience like that. You were probably like, people are having so much fun doing this. I'm having fun, I think, because everyone looks like they're having fun. I'll sign up again.
That's exactly
I would
what
love
happened.
To bike 500 and some odd miles
in
what looked like it must have been oppressive heat because everyone in your pictures was sunburned.
Well, everyone was sunburned, but what is interesting is that it was oppressively cold.
More than anything.
Because you're on the coast, and at least through the first half of it, you're in Northern California, which is not a warm place.
Not,
there was, as one of my friends reminded me when I arrived in San Francisco and texted them and said, it's really cold. She shot that Mark Twain quote at me, what is it? Oh, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. And that is sort of like what the first 4 days of this bike ride were.
You wouldn't know it from the
and
photos.
And you're sleeping outside. So that's not great.
No,
so
it's like, that's never great.
It's like 50 degrees.
If you want to know what 100% of my lack of interest in this event is about, it's the fact that you spend that entire week not just biking. I mean, biking sounds exhausting and a little boring, but like I could deal with that. Camping.
Yeah, you bike 100 miles a day.
Then you're forced
to
camp.
You've been on your bike 12 hours, and then you have to go pick up a tent and go set it up.
I mean, and then sleep in that tent.
Sleep in it.
Like, if I just had to set up a tent at the
Luckily,
end of the day.
Luckily, I got my own tent, which was
exciting. Yeah, well, thank God,
I got lucky.
What if you had had a chatty tent mate?
Or a snoring tent
or
mate.
Or a snoring tent mate.
Snorers everywhere.
Or an idiot tent mate. You had to deal with their idiocy all the time. Things could have been really bad.
Yeah, it could have been. But we're back.
But we're back.
You're back
we're
from
back
New York.
On
I'm back from the bike ride.
Track. We're back on schedule. We're
going to
be back to our weekly recording schedule.
Yeah.
And this was an exciting 2 weeks.
It was.
Mostly because every person in America declared their candidacy for presidency.
Correct.
There were about 500 people that were not running the last time we recorded a podcast and currently are.
Currently are. Right. But before we even get to that, there was a delicious scandal.
Oh my God.
This last week.
This is the best.
Yeah. And this was, this was sort of nobody, this came out of nowhere.
No, it just landed in our laps.
Our
collective American laps.
Everyone was like, what is this? Like,
it was... Who has heard the name Dennis Hastert recently, or at least before this week?
No one. Like, why would anyone think
that... In the last decade.
Right, exactly.
Had you ever thought about Dennis Hastert? I certainly hadn't.
No.
I didn't think much of him when he was a relevant person.
Right, exactly. No, you wouldn't have.
And now here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Under him being arraigned today, as you're listening to this, under federal charges.
Under the juiciest federal charges.
Right, exactly. Well, and... It's interesting because the charges, the exact charges that he is being, you know, charged with are not that juicy. But it's
because he's
being charged with basically, like, pulling out too much funds, like, in one withdrawal from his bank accounts. He was, like, taking out, like, $50,000 at a time. And there are laws on the books that, like, you can't be withdrawing, like, this amount of money. Like, and he was doing it, like, every month, basically. So, like, the banks, like, started asking him about it. Ultimately, the FBI got involved, I think, like, in 2013 or something like that. And so there's been, like, this ongoing investigation.
Now,
then
Brent,
he started...
I ask you,
Yeah.
Why was he withdrawing this money?
Well, this is, yes, and this is why it's juicy, is because in the indictments, it just refers to him making payments to Individual A, I think it was called. But yes, what we have since learned with people close to the investigation and people who sort of like have knowledge of it is that it was he was paying off a person to prevent them from publicly saying that he had sexually harassed them when he was
sexually abused them.
Yeah, no, not harassed.
Right, not harassed. Yes, abused. Excuse
me. Abused them when he was a teacher back in Illinois
and
when he was
like a wrestling coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god!
And it was like they had apparently agreed on $3.5 million, and he had only ended up, I think, up to this point, like paid him like $1.7 million.
Embarrassing.
And it was a male, of course. Obviously. I mean, it wasn't going to be a female.
No.
Let's not get ourselves.
No.
But
this is by the way, if you need like a brief history lesson in the Dennis Hastert of yore.
Yes.
This is the guy who succeeded Newt Gingrich back during the Clinton impeachment scandal.
Correct.
Because Newt Gingrich, obviously not the upstanding guy we all hoped he would be.
Correct.
He got embarrassed out of office.
Right. So he stepped down.
He stepped down. And then Dennis Hastert was appointed to replace him.
Right. And actually, before Dennis Hastert was even appointed to replace him, what's his name? Livingston. What's his name?
Rob Livingston.
Yeah, Rob Livingston was supposed to be the next in line, but as he was taking power, he never ended up getting to take it because we found out
he was sleeping with everyone.
He was sleeping with all the women except his wife.
So he couldn't be speaker.
So they literally were like left with the situation where they was like, we have to find the cleanest person in our party. And the person that they decided on.
So they found squeaky clean Dennis Hastert, who was paying $50,000 a month to the man that he sexually abused while he was his teacher. That's what it is to be squeaky clean in the Republican Party.
God, so good. It's terrible. I feel bad for the guy. But
I mean, it's terrible.
At least he got $1.7 million out of the deal.
It's terrible, but it's like, and this is not just the Republican Party of today, where they just hate everybody and they're bigots.
No, this is the Republican Party in the early 2000s.
Where they're trying to discredit Bill Clinton for sleeping with Monica Lewinsky, or for, for having sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky.
Well, and the one thing that
they were attempting at this very moment.
Right.
Using this figure, after they had embarrassed themselves with Newt Gingrich, they were attempting to discredit the Democrats for what is certainly less horrible behavior than this.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because the one sort of, dark mark on Hastert's tenure as Speaker, because he was sort of, even at the time, thought of as pretty clean, but he didn't handle the Mark Foley situation very good.
Right.
Do you remember the Mark Foley thing where he was like, diddling his intern, basically, and, like, didn't sort of, like, act quickly enough on that for a lot
related.
Of people. And then he knew where Mark Foley was coming from.
Right.
So
he understood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it can be tough when,
Boy.
That's...
But there was... Did you see the clip from C-SPAN?
No.
Oh, okay. So
I want you to tell me everything.
No, okay. So there was this... I just happened to see this on the news, but there was this thing where he was... Just either, like, last year or the year before, it was, like, just on C-SPAN, like, doing, like, a Q&A or whatever. Because also part of this indictment, and it's not necessarily part of the indictment because it wasn't illegal, but they were talking to someone who was basically, like, his financial advisor. And, like, in 2010, which is when these payments sort of, like, started to go into effect, or when he started, pulling out all of his money, he sought a person to, like, help boost his... like, financial portfolio, basically. Because he was a lobbyist, but he's not one of these people who sort of, like, comes out of Congress and then is, like, worth, like, $1 trillion.
Right.
So he was, like, basically needed to get more money.
Just to pay off this guy.
So he sort of, like, started doing the speaking tours. He got involved in, like, a lot of land deals and, like, other various, like, things or whatever. Right. But there was this thing that he was, like, I don't know, maybe he was promoting something or whatever, but he was on C-SPAN, and, like, some guy called in, and he was, like, hey, Denny, do you remember Chuck from Rockville or whatever?
No.
And then, like, he sort of, like, goes blank. And he was like, yes. And then the guy basically just, like, hangs up the phone.
No.
So it was, like, this weird... And where, like, everyone was sort of, like... No one... Everybody thought at the time that it was, like, sort of weird, but it wasn't, like, a big enough event that, like... First off, like, who cares
about Dennis Hastert
on C-SPAN? I mean, like, that's...
We're not going to care about that. That's the least television event. Nobody knew what it was.
But now, looking back, everyone is like, oh, my God. That weird thing that happened on C-SPAN. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that good?
Oh, my God.
So good.
It's the greatest / most disturbing news story of ever.
I know.
Oh, yeah. My God.
What a weird one.
What?
I wish we could have more like that.
I wish. I know. Like, I mean, there are more like that. We just don't know about them yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Anytime that the Republicans are on a witch hunt, we know there's more. That's right. What I think we've learned exactly from this scenario.
Yeah.
Because almost none of the Republicans that were involved with those Clinton impeachment hearings have gone unmarked.
No, I know. It's
true. Like everyone who was involved in that turned out to have their own skeletons.
Totally.
So, like, guys.
Yeah.
Do better. In any case, let's get down to the really important news, which is who announced... This is not actually the really important news. There is more important news that we're burying in this podcast, because what we really wanted to talk about was Dennis Hastert and then all of the people who announced.
It's the election, guys. What do you want from us?
This is our jam.
Okay.
So in any case, this was... The last 2 weeks were just a treasure trove of wonderful announcements by crazy people.
That's
Rick Perry announced.
Announcements by people who are unequivocally not going to be president.
Exactly.
Announced their candidacy for president.
Relevant slate of a million announcements that you could possibly hope for.
That's right. Starting off with Rick Perry.
He's really trying to, like, push home. What's the expression I'm looking for? It's not push home.
Bring home.
Bring home. God. He's really trying to bring home this, like, hit home.
That's...
With this... With this veterans thing.
Yeah.
He's really trying to be like, I was in the Air Force, and he's always surrounded by veterans. We're going to talk in a little while about an event he went to in Iowa where he was, like, surrounded by veterans the whole time.
Another great story.
I can't wait to talk about.
Yeah.
But so he's, like, really trying to make himself the military candidate.
Yeah, he had, like, a giant set piece, basically, because he announced in front of, like, this huge plane, this four-propeller C-130 plane. I don't know what that
is. This is interesting from
the
man
that he flew
who just declared war on the Army, by the way. Well, I want to remind you that Texas is a state where the National Guard was asked to keep an eye on the Army while they did military exercises.
Right. And then they also asked the federal government to come in and bail them out from their flooding, too, by
so
the way.
So true.
So...
They can't be trusted.
No.
But in any case... So, he's trying to sort of play up his military credibility. And I guess in this field, I mean, he is the one who can at least try to do that.
That's true.
There's no John McCain in this field.
No,
like, once when John McCain's in a field, you
none
can't be the military candidate.
Right.
But
none of them have been shot down from the plane.
No, exactly.
Four times, or however many times.
John McCain, he hasn't been shot down that many times. He has crashed that many times. There's a difference. He has been shot down maybe two or three of those times. Right, not even. Maybe one or two of those times.
Sure.
He has crashed four or five times. Very different. In any case, a lot of Texas people running. It's like getting a little crazy in there.
Yeah, because there's him.
There's him. There's Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
And then Jeb Bush is like essentially a Texan.
Right.
He, by the way, though, is crowding out people in Texas and Florida. So he's really spreading his wings in a lot of ways.
Because he really is.
Marco Rubio is constantly being sort of knocked for not being the right Florida candidate because of Jeb Bush. But, like, we all know that Jeb Bush, despite having been the governor of Florida, is a Texan.
That's right.
Because we know...
And he's an idiot.
And an idiot, like the other Bushes. So, we, you know, it's crazy town. But in any case, so Rick Perry, not, you know, understandably is having a hard time figuring out how to separate himself from the pack. And so he's gone with this military thing, I think.
Well, and he also sort of... In his speech, he did not say one thing about his campaign in 2012.
It was an embarrassing one.
Besides the fact that he has to now figure out how to separate himself from all of the candidates, and we're going to list them for you in a little bit because they're hard to keep track of.
A lot.
He also sort of, like, has to shed this image that he created for himself in 2012. He's not just starting from scratch. He's starting from, like, negative scratch.
Yeah.
Basically. He's in the hole.
He's in the hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and also, I've always felt that he has a distinct disadvantage in so far as he looks very much like George Bush.
He does.
And he sounds like him, too.
And those glasses
aren't fooling anyone.
Nope. That's right.
But so I've always felt like, even in a race where Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother, is running, Rick Perry reminds me the most of George Bush.
I can see that.
So that's a problem for him.
Mm-hmm.
Also announcing... Our very own Rick Santorum.
That's right.
He doesn't belong to us.
Nope.
He's not our own. America's very own Rick Santorum.
That's right.
Pink sweater vest lover Rick Santorum.
But they're gone.
They're gone. They're getting rid of the sweater vest this year.
Going away forever.
This is so disappointing.
He's trimmer. He's wearing suits.
I don't know.
He's more polished this time
around. I feel like this is a lose-lose strategy for him.
He's also much worse this time
around. I was going to say, the sweater vests were sort of his shtick, and we were like, this is the kind of guy who hates gays and wears sweater vests.
Yeah. It sort of made him charming.
He's not a successful businessman. Like, I don't buy him in a suit.
He has his outfits with the wrong campaigns that he was running.
Yes.
Because in 2012, he was running the sort of, you know, very anti-Obamacare campaign.
He was running this sort of like, fiscally responsible.
Right, exactly. And now he's running this of the people campaign.
Right.
He's running the sweater vest campaign right now, but he's not wearing the sweater vest.
It's so he's wearing the frustrating.
Suit. He's got it backwards.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
He is so frustrating.
He is.
But so the sweater vests are unfortunately gone for good, as are Rick Santorum's ideals.
Right, exactly.
Because currently he's
not talking about the gays anymore.
Running Dennis Kucinich's campaign.
I know.
What he's running actually is Mike Huckabee's campaign.
Mike Huckabee's campaign, yeah, exactly.
I mean, in a very distinct way. This is the exact campaign that Mike Huckabee came onto the scene
running. He's also running John Edwards' campaign.
Too. Yeah.
I mean he's even been talking about the two Americas, John Edwards doesn't own that either, but I mean.
No, but John Edwards is most recently famous for that.
For that,
and if you are a person with a memory, that is the person that you think of as talking about the two Americas.
Right, of course.
Until Rick Santorum came along. But so he's been going on about revitalizing the middle class. He's trying to be like a real sort of like, he announced from a dead factory town, basically, struggling factory town outside Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And talked about how his parents worked for the VA and how he was on the Armed Services Committee in the Senate.
He's also trying to get his sort of foreign policy and armed...
Right, because currently he only has credibility as a gay hater.
Correct.
So he needs to bolster his credibility as a person with policy ideas.
Right.
And so he's trying to do that.
His announcement is interesting, though, because, like, we have known that he was going to be running for a while, and he's, you know, the Republicans sort of have this at least recent history where, you know, McCain lost the nomination and then won it the next year. Romney lost the nomination to McCain, won it the next year. Santorum really came in second place to Romney last year, and he was the second person, the last one standing.
According to Republican lore, he's supposed to win.
And he has polling at, like, 2 and 3% right
now. He's irrelevant right now.
So it's odd.
It's not odd because I think that we're in a different era, obviously, but like Rick Santorum was the second in a completely non-credible field.
I was going to say
he's not the next rich white man.
No.
He's a lunatic.
Right, like, exactly. He was actually the second most qualified person in the 2012
field.
Republican field. He's now like the 13th most qualified person in the new Republican field.
And the field is literally big enough for him to be the 13th and not be the least qualified. We want to keep that in mind as we continue down
this
list.
Yeah, we're going to get there in a second.
But also, he is without the guy who helped him win Iowa last time.
Yes, Chuck Lauder, who is the Iowa GOP operative who, like, really sort of, like, everyone sort of, you know, gave him the credit for, like, his big win. He, like, crisscrossed the state with Santorum.
They were calling the Chuck truck.
The Chuck truck. Guess who he is now currently working for? For a potential campaign for president.
This is unbelievable/amazing.
Donald Trump.
I mean.
The guy who helped Rick Santorum win Iowa is planning a potential Donald Trump candidacy.
And not
in
only
Iowa.
That, but has seen that there is a Santorum campaign definitively happening and thought,
left it in
you know what? I'm going to go with Trump. This guy seems like my ticket.
That's right.
That's a real thing that's happening out there in the world.
And
that was not written by comedy writers. George Pataki also declared in what was. It's like the tree falls in the forest.
No, I mean, exactly, totally.
The answer is no. If a man announces in New Hampshire, does anyone hear it? And the answer is no.
No, that's correct.
He announced in what was apparently an uncomfortably hot town hall in New Hampshire.
Yes,
in Exeter, which was apparently the town where the Republican Party was founded, not the Republican Party of today. The Republican Party of yore.
Yes.
Yore's Republican Party was a very different party because it was the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
So that's a different thing already. He released a 4-minute announcement video also, in which he had a really head-scratching sort of tagline quote, where he says, if the nation is to flourish, quote, we have to fall in love with America again.
I just couldn't possibly know what that means.
What is that about?
Right.
What could he be referring to?
That is one of those things where, like, people... So this is one of those things where, like, this bothers me all the time, where people say things like this that just don't have any meaning. The only way to
Sarah Palin, famous practitioner of the strategy.
The only way to prove that you are in love with America is to do something to show your love for America.
Right.
And I would contend that none of the Republicans are wanting to do that.
No.
It's sort of like when someone says, you have to show that, you know, I love God.
Right.
Like, well, you can't give God flowers. So, like, you can't give America flowers. Like, what does that mean? Like, what are you going to do to show me that you love America?
It doesn't mean running a campaign solely to get yourself a book deal and potential television offers.
Well, that's it.
That's what it doesn't mean. I know that much.
Right.
I don't know a lot about what he's talking about here because it doesn't make any sense.
No, I don't either.
But that's one thing I know.
He's also going the route of that a previous New Yorker has gone in Rudy Giuliani
and
putting all of his eggs in the New Hampshire basket, which is a proven losing strategy.
Like
the worst. If you have a strategy that you want to employ to lose the nomination for the Republican,
put all your eggs in the New Hampshire basket and be a total unknown.
Rudy Giuliani. What's his dick from last time? The guy who actually probably would have been a decent president, who was the Republican.
Huntsman.
John Huntsman.
Yeah.
All these moderate Republicans think that they're going to camp out in New Hampshire and then somehow, like, you know, steal the nomination away from, like, the crazy person in the room.
Well, and mysteriously, they think this knowing that, like, they're going to be shut out in Iowa, obviously, but then they're just going to move on to South Carolina. Like, they're
going to
be forgotten immediately, even if they make a medium showing in New Hampshire.
Right.
Like, that doesn't help anyone.
Right. But he doesn't have any place in this.
He's nowhere to go.
He has nowhere to go. And he also doesn't have any place in, like,
in the field.
In this current Republican Party anyway. I mean,
he's pro-sensible
gun control.
These blue state Republicans.
I know, right?
There's nowhere for them. And this is even ultimately, I think, going to be Chris Christie's problem. Is, like, he's getting away with it because he's such a personality. But, like, he ultimately is not conservative enough for this party.
He's not.
He's the New Jersey governor.
He has claimed before that he believes that climate change is real and that man causes it. I mean, like, George Pataki is pro-gay marriage.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was never going to be the president.
No.
Because he couldn't have been the governor of California and been a contender for the Republican presidential.
Exactly.
Also, he's Austrian.
He truly wasn't born here.
Similar to Ted Cruz, he definitively was born in another nation to parents of different nationalities.
Correct.
But, yeah, it's Pataki's campaign is really more about a potential, what it will do for his career later. Because Pataki is a person who no one has thought about in a decade or so. And is also very tall. I just bring that up every time that he's mentioned. Because he's a very tall guy. Every time that I've seen Pataki in person, I've thought to myself, you are very tall.
Huh.
That's the only thing you think when you see him.
And not just because you're short.
De Blasio, also very tall. But when you see him, you're like, you're kind of goofy and tall. Like, he has a quality to himself.
Uh-huh.
Pataki, just tall. He's a tall white person.
Interesting.
That's what he is.
That's it. Yeah.
That's all you have. Lindsey Graham is a declarer of his intentions to run for president.
That's right.
That's a real thing that's happening, too.
That's right.
Another sort of attempt at a solo state victory.
I know.
That will go nowhere.
He, of the four people that we just talked about, I think
credible human.
And I think has the sort of most potential claim to have people vote for him.
Wouldn't it be amazing if him and Bernie Sanders ended up running? Two, like, foggy old guys.
Right? I mean,
that would be awesome.
He is easily the most hawkish. And if we are to truly believe that the Republicans care more about foreign policy, we've talked about the polling.
It's not a thing we truly believe, P.S.
Right,
I mean, that's not actually a thing we truly believe, but if we as a people are truly believing what they're trying to tell us we should believe.
Correct. I mean, he sort of, like, has the most claim to that sort of, you know, he can really put a stake in the
ground. He can out-hawk anyone except Hillary Clinton.
Correct. Yes, exactly.
But he's been focusing on his sort of populist roots.
Right. Well, and that's, he is apparently has been uncomfortable, like, talking about his personal background sort of over the years that he's been running
for
office.
This is because of the era of person that he is, which is the old era.
Exactly.
It's a different era.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about this.
It's not one where you talk about your personal life.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently in 2014, when he was running for re-election, he was running against, like, six people, and he was sort of, like, taking a lot of heat for, like, being, like, the Washington insider, so he sort of, like, pulled out this personal story that he hadn't really ever told, and it's, you know,
it's compelling.
Much as
we are big enough people to admit that Ben Carson's story is pretty inspiring.
Right.
Do the same for Lindsey Graham.
Right, exactly. Because he was...
It's the kind of story that would make John Boehner cry to himself.
Right, exactly.
Tears of how inspiring he is.
That's right. His parents were pool hall owners, and they were basically impoverished, or so the story goes anyway. They lived, like, in the back of the pool hall that they both worked at, and they died when he was in college, and so he took care of his two younger sisters while he was in college. He was coming back every weekend to basically, like, take care of them and whatever else. So, like, and then he went into the Air Force and became a lawyer, and then is now South Carolina senior senator. I mean, you know, it's a quality story. I mean, that's a presidential story.
That's right. That's the American dream, sort of.
That's right. sort of.
That's
right.
somewhere along the way, the American dream gets derailed once you're in the Senate.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's really, you know, he's someone who's trying to hit hard on foreign policy because that's sort of his claim in this race.
Right.
And I think it's the thing that he, I think, sees himself really being able to, like, tackle Hillary on.
Right.
I would contend that he can tackle her in the sense that he can remind everyone how similar they are.
Yeah.
But he will not tackle her to Republican audiences.
No.
But in any case, this is the point where I think we should review who all the Republicans in the race are.
Right, because those are the people, since we last podcasted, have announced.
So here's officially, we have 10 candidates currently declared.
Correct.
We have Ted Cruz, we have Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, George Pataki, Lindsey Graham, and Rick Perry.
Right.
Now,
that's 10.
That's 10. Now, there are two people who have not yet announced, but are definitively going to.
Right.
That's Jeb Bush and Scott Walker.
Right. They're currently in the process of running for president. Right. They just, like,
they just haven't officially released their video or whatever you do, or gone to their town hall meeting in New Hampshire, whatever they're up to. That's 12. There are also three people that are probably announcing / maybe announcing, are definitively sort of, like, in the talk.
Right. Have dipped their toe in the water.
Chris Christie, he, I would say, is sort of somewhere between obviously announcing and dipping his toe in.
Correct.
It's just sort of like, will a scandal derail him again?
Right.
Bobby Jindal, who, let's hope he runs. For God's sakes, people. If you care about America at all.
Yeah.
And then we have John Kasich.
Right. Who, and we've talked about him.
We talked about last time.
Who basically sounds like he's going to do it.
Someone who maybe no one will care. He might be the George Pataki of this race, not in that he's currently irrelevant because he is the governor of Ohio.
Right.
Currently, but just because in this field, how is he the person that people notice?
Right.
He's not. But that's 15, and then we also have the maybe of Donald Trump.
Right.
That's 16.
And this is
that's
sort of
16 people, guys.
He's a big maybe, but that is he. This is the most
in he's been.
This is the most in he's been,
and he is 50% in every time.
Right, exactly.
He's a man who's always planning to run for president.
He's more than 50% in. He's majority
Every time he gets a little more in.
That's right.
So currently this is the most in he's ever been.
16.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. By the way, after an election in which they embarrass themselves by having this very thing happen, but with even fewer candidates than this.
I know. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like there's a lot of talk, like, amongst Republicans about this field and talking about the deep field that they have.
Yeah. And none of these people are credible candidates.
It's deep in number.
Right.
I mean,
it's not deep in people that could be president.
Right. I was going to say, you know, I feel like a lot of people are, you know, talking about sort of like, you know, the Democrats' weak field, and that is just because everybody was too scared to run against Hillary. I mean, there are certainly 16 more people, all of which would be more qualified
than any of these jokers.
They're just not currently running. So you can talk about having a deep field if you want, but just running 16 fools
does not make a field deep.
If you had a basketball team of 16 people, you could say that you had a deep bench, but if none of them knew how to play basketball, you would have a losing basketball team.
So true.
That is currently
what... Thank you for using a sports analogy.
Sure.
Because I felt like this is really where we're at. A sports analogy really sums this up pretty neatly.
That's right.
Like, if you had a basketball team that was so big that it could not beat a 5-person basketball team...
You have a losing basketball team.
You still have a losing basketball team.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter how many people you have.
Adding people to the team.
Like, your basketball team of, like, chihuahuas is not going to beat 5 professional basketball players. So, this is a comical notion. Also, a great notion. Because
correct.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest things that the GOP has brought us recently.
That's right.
We
had some Democratic announcements.
Some fake
as well.
Democratic announcements, too. Not all of these are real.
No. We're going to get to that in a little bit, too, because the people who are running for the Democratic nomination is a hilarious situation that you probably haven't thought about.
No, because none of them are Democrats. But moving along, we begin with Lincoln Chafee, a person who you might remember as a Republican.
Senator. Independent governor.
An independent governor.
and now Democratic nominee for president.
Since 2013, he's a Democrat, apparently, and he's running for president. Mostly, it seems to, mostly, I don't know what his actual intentions are. According to what I've been reading, most of it seems to be about the metric system. The people got really into this metric system discussion for some reason as soon as he announced. Lincoln Chafee is in favor of switching to the metric system. Now, as you know, Brent and I are not in favor of that.
That's right.
We're very much against that. We're proponents of living in the dark ages if that's what it takes.
That's right.
So Lincoln Chafee, not on our list already, But he's planning, in a very bizarre twist of fate, to basically be attacking Hillary for her Iraq war vote.
Right.
Which, well, and how did we get here, guys?
I know. And he sort of like, in a, I mean, he has.
This is, at the time, he is a member of the Republican Party, we should remind you.
He has less, he has sort of like an interesting, I think, if Bernie Sanders wasn't running, and granted they are politically, could not be further apart from each other than the Iraq war vote, which they both voted no on. I would say that he would have an interesting story to tell if he could get people to pay attention to him.
He's a Rockefeller Republican.
He's a Rockefeller Republican.
So he's very fiscally conservative.
He's fiscally conservative. He's not any further to the right than Hillary Clinton is. And having...
And that should tell us all something.
And it's so interesting to me, and we have talked about this before, that it really... Could it be the Iraq vote that derails her again?
I mean,
I don't think it will necessarily be from Lincoln Chafee.
No,
but it is so interesting that in 2016 we are going to be talking about ISIS, and we've already seen Rand Paul, who's a Republican, talking about how it was the Iraq War that left us with this giant mess. I think that is sort of the general wisdom, except like the crazy total hawk Republicans.
Well, and we're going to have hawks also sort of pushing their way to the right and forcing her to differentiate herself and having a hard time.
And I don't think Lincoln Chafee has any chance in hell. No. But it is...
Except in Florida, where they love this stuff.
It is interesting that a Republican is attempting to
run as a Democrat to her left.
To run to Hillary's left on foreign policy.
And to her middle on everything else, ultimately. I mean, that's ultimately what the new Democrats are, is Lincoln Chafee's.
Yeah.
Plus hawkish foreign policy. So really, they're just Republicans. But what's so interesting about this also to me is that Lincoln Chafee is... Him and Hillary are products of two very distinct kinds of American political dynasties. Because Lincoln Chafee is from Rhode Island. He's from a political dynasty in Rhode Island.
Right.
Literally every member of his family has served in office at some point.
Yeah, he took over. He was appointed to his father's seat when his father died.
Right. But like his great uncles were, governors of Rhode Island. And I mean, like every member of his family, every male member of his family has basically served some sort of Rhode Island office.
Yeah.
And obviously Hillary is part of a different sort of more modern kind of political dynasty where... Her husband was already the president, and then she was already a senator, and the Clintons are the political machine of the new era.
Yeah.
But so this is such an interesting sort of combo to have. Not that he's even relevant to the primary, but it's just sort of hilarious that this is where we've wound up.
Right. Well, and he is also, besides the Iraq war vote, I mean, he is really sort of, Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders, who are in the race, and we'll talk about both of them in
seconds.
In a few seconds, yeah, exactly. Have sort of shied away from direct attacks against her. I mean, they're obviously saying things that are sort of
the antithesis of things she's saying.
You know what they're talking about when they say the things that they're saying. But he has thrown caution to the wind.
Well, what does he have to lose? He's a Republican.
He doesn't give a flying fuck.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not going to be president, and he's a Republican.
He was asked in a Q&A about Hillary Clinton, and he said, "Our State Department just has to be above all the controversy, and it's regrettable now to me what's happening with the emails and with the Clinton Foundation." He is obviously hitting her on this Iraq war vote of hers. He's sort of just not really fucking around with her.
No.
Which is...
He's getting to it.
I can
enjoy
that.
And then he's getting to promoting the metric system, which I can't get into. I just feel, for some reason, and I don't know what, maybe it just got sent to me a lot because everyone knows I hate the metric system.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this was really big news. I saw this metric system situation reported everywhere.
That's so
funny. That makes me
that's
angrier.
A stance. I know, right?
It makes me even angrier.
That can't be a talking point.
That can't be a talking point. And also... That's a very divisive Democratic issue, I feel. Don't bring that up.
Yeah.
But in any case, of the Democrats we have...
Right, this is
hilarious.
We wanted
to quickly review how many of them are Democrats.
One.
Because only one of them is.
One out of five.
Yeah. We begin with Bernie Sanders. He runs as a socialist.
Yeah.
He was a Democrat at one time. Democrats ran him out.
Right.
Like the idiots they are, because obviously he's an American hero. And so he became a socialist, and he's been happily socialist ever since.
Yes. He's the longest-serving independent congressperson that we've ever had.
Yeah. And he's doing a bang-up job.
That's right.
Then we have Lincoln Chafee.
He's a Republican.
He's been an independent. He's from a Republican dynasty. He's a person who only now finds room for himself in the Democratic Party because the Clintons took over the Democratic Party, and they are Republicans. Yeah. We have Jim Webb, a person that you've already forgotten is running for president, because I certainly had.
Right.
He is basically a former Republican. He endorsed George Allen, the Virginia Senate race in 2000.
Who was
the Republican candidate.
He then ran against him and beat him in 2006.
Right.
That was the whole Macaca.
Right, that was the Macaca campaign. That was right. a great campaign.
But so, I mean, this is a person who has endorsed Republicans
right.
before in
yeah.
his past.
And
then we have Hillary Clinton, who, I mean, we know as a sort of like moderate right Democrat anyway, but she was a Goldwater girl.
That is the worst thing to be reminded of.
In high school at the time. So I'm going to cut her a little slack.
The way
I feel like she's still
the way that Laura
better.
Bush used to be a Democrat and came from a strong Democratic family.
Right, exactly.
But then. Yeah. Idiotically married
and
George
Hillary
Bush.
Has talked about that. Like she was like, I was not born a Democrat. So I mean, you know,
but that's
God
why her instincts
that,
are.
But like, we literally are at a point where there are five people who have announced because
Martin O'Malley,
four who we just said, and then Martin O'Malley, and only one of them has always been a Democrat.
Yeah, and that person is someone who's not going to be the president.
Correct.
Because that is Martin O'Malley, who we're just about to tell you about the announcement of.
That's right.
He announced this week.
That's right.
That's really all I have to say about that. Do you have more to add?
Nope.
Sure Martin O'Malley is right here in the race
He's
now.
Attempting to run to Hillary's left, which I don't see
that happening.
I don't see that happening. I don't know that it's believable. And we're going to talk in a second about the candidate to Hillary's left is already killing it, and he's already there, and no one else is going to be able to be that candidate.
Also, I was talking to someone from Maryland today, and they were like, everyone that I know really hates Martin O'Malley because he lost that governor's race. They were like, he took a blue state and somehow made it red with his just like general lack of interestingness.
He was not able to pass on his governorship. Yeah.
So they're in Maryland pretty mad at him about that.
Yeah.
That makes me think that he might run the risk of not being someone who could win his own state.
Yikes.
Which also makes me think that he runs the risk of being forgettable to everyone else.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's not what makes me think that, but I know that to be true.
He did. The only thing that I would like to add about this, we pulled a lot of facts, and you're right. Who cares?
Right.
But he apparently, according to someone who was like close to their campaign, he called Hillary Clinton.
Oh yeah, right.
And like the day before that, he announced and told her personally that it was quote time for new leadership.
Did this really happen?
Wow.
Do you think?
I mean, could it have?
I don't know. I mean, what an awkward phone call to make.
Right.
Like. Hey, Hillary.
I know.
It's Martin.
Yep.
Just wanted to tell you that I don't think it's fair that you're running.
Right.
I'm about to announce.
Right. I know I endorsed you in 2007.
Right. Unfortunately, that won't be possible this time because I'm trying to beat you.
Right.
Like.
But I won't, so good luck.
Right.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoy your second go-round.
Yeah.
But so that's an interesting, maybe that shows that he's tough on something.
Mm-hmm.
Tough on Hillary. I don't know. Maybe that's enough.
Yeah.
In any case, Hillary's polling numbers, as no one should be surprised to find,
right.
are down.
In this week's Hillary/We Told You So news of the week, it's Hillary Clinton is now back to being a politician, and we've all get to be reminded that we don't like her.
Right. Just as we have always said would happen, she's using up all of her State Department goodwill.
Right. It's
gone. And now that we're trying to talk to her about actual policy issues, we're remembering that we don't like her policy issues.
Oh, fuck. Damn it.
She's a Republican.
I forgot that we didn't like her.
Right. God.
Damn.
Did you remember that she voted for the Iraq War and the Patriot Act?
She's really untrustworthy, Hillary
really
Clinton.
Really far to the right. That's what's going on in the heads of Americans nationwide.
Right. And not only that, and I would say if you're not thinking that, because I was talking to my parents about this week and my parents were in town, and what is interesting to me about her campaign is that she is really sort of like attempting to run to the left, which I think is actually sort of like driving up some of these untrustworthy numbers. Because I think that it's, if this were any other candidate other than her, I think we would be, we'd be calling her a flip-flopper. We'd be calling her an etch-a-sketcher.
She would be John Kerry.
Exactly. And I sort of think she's getting a little bit of a pass on that because none of the things that I'm agreeing with most of the things that are coming out of her mouth right now.
Right. I just don't believe that she believes any of the things that are coming out of her mouth right now.
Bingo.
Because she has said the exact opposite on numerous occasions.
Not because
I just don't trust her.
Bingo.
Because she is saying things that are the opposite of things she used to say.
Correct.
And I also, I feel like to some degree she gets this pass because I think that people are just willing to believe it because she's female and they're like, women's issues. And she's good on women's issues.
Right.
You know, and so I think that for some reason people are like, because she's great on women's issues, she's right. a liberal.
Right.
And like forget that there's like a whole other set of policy issues that make you a liberal that are not just not thinking that women should like be barefoot and pregnant right. in your kitchen.
Correct.
Like that's yeah. not enough to make you yeah. a liberal. But I also think, and this is something that I think, you know, I've said that it works to her detriment before and she should be aware of it. I've also said that it's unfortunate that this is happening to her. It's obviously happening because she's female. But, like, she just comes off as so much more unlikable than a lot of the other candidates in the national sort of estimation. Yeah. And I've said on numerous occasions, like, in one-on-one circumstances, she's lovely and she doesn't come off that way.
Right.
But for some reason, her tone really, like, strikes people as shrill when she speaks to crowds.
Right.
And so she gets, like, sort of she – and this is something that by now – it's unfortunate, but she should know. She yeah. should know what to do about it because, you know, there are other female candidates who don't have this problem. Like, Liz Warren doesn't have this problem.
Right.
It's not just, it's not a problem that's just because she's female. It's a certain tone that she strikes. So I feel like to some degree, I'm just sort of like, it's like we're underwater for all the reasons that we knew we'd be underwater here.
Right.
So like, why wasn't there a plan?
Yeah. Well, and exactly. And people are sort of like now starting to freak out because there were a couple polls last week. Excuse me. Where there was a CNN poll where she was down to 46% in her favorability ratings, and that is the worst that she's been in the past 14 years.
Yeah.
And her, so she was at 46% favorability and 50% unfavorable, so she's underwater
yeah.
now there. And there was another poll also released last week by the Washington Post that had her favorability at just 45%, which is the lowest that they had polled that at since 2008 when she was sort of in the middle of that primary fight with Obama.
When no one liked her.
Right. So now people are sort of panicked that, A, this happened so fast. Everyone sort of knew. I mean, you
right.
know, we weren't geniuses to think that her poll numbers would go yeah. down once she started to be a politician. Whenever you're sort of like the Secretary
brought
of State
back into
or
controversial...
anything like that, like, you sort of are like... And to the and above the fray type of person, yeah. you're sort of like looked at as a problem solver. You're not because you're not sort of like in the nitty gritty of it all the time. So
yeah.
she is now back in the nitty gritty of it, and so like I think everyone expected the poll numbers to go down to a certain degree, but they've
this
gone
turnaround
down.
Happened very fast.
It happened very fast, and that is sort of what everyone is concerned
and
about.
And I think
it
also
really sort of like immediately after declaring it, just like went into the tank.
I think they really didn't expect some. Crazy upstart like Bernie Sanders to be drawing the kind of excitement that he's drawing either.
Well, right. Well,
because who would have guessed that would happen, P.S.?
Well, right. Well, she's got a problem. She's now got a problem to her left, and she's got a problem to her right, too, because she's now looking not as good against all of her Republican people
right.
that she's running against. It's looking closer in Ohio and Florida when you poll against individual Republicans who are running, like when she polls against Scott Walker and Jeb Bush and some
right.
of those people, it is now way closer than it used to be. I mean, she used to be blowing these people out of the water. She is no longer doing that. So there's concern as to whether she can sort of like win some of these like moderate, like right-leaning states, because I think that the general consensus was always like she would be the type of person
who could
who would
this
win
from
those.
The same people though who thought that Lieberman was a great addition to a ticket because he could help us do that.
Correct.
I mean, these are not yeah. the
yeah.
thinkers. This is not, you know, we talk a lot about how Democrats win when Democrats vote.
Right.
And so I think that people often, you know, people think that she's the kind of candidate who could both pull voters and sort of like pull right-leaning voters to her, you know, into her caucus.
Yeah.
And I think that what they're finding is that that goodwill is disappearing very quickly.
Right.
And well, that and, excitement is disappearing very quickly.
And this is what you and I have been saying for so long. Like, literally, what was that, 2012 or 13 that we wrote that
yeah.
piece, that blog entry that we said? And there was, like, there's a great moment in that blog, to toot our own horn for a second, that, like...
We love to do that. You know we do.
We said something about, like, don't put, you know, don't commit to a losing strategy before attempting to find
yes.
a winning strategy. And that is exactly
that's what
we're doing
here.
And people are now panicked because we have put all of our eggs in one basket. I mean, maybe not because Bernie Sanders
it's
is
like,
killing
really
it
killing
and that's
it.
Our next story.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, yes, everyone is freaking the fuck out. This is
but
what happens. This is what happens when you don't have a contested primary.
This is
when you have
yeah.
a person like her and everyone is just going to coronate and then she starts flaming out and you don't have anything else, then you're fucked. And that is what we've been saying this for 3 years.
Also, I think that people forget because a lot, you know, when you have an uncontested primary in a state office, it will often just go uncontested. The presidential primary takes so long
right.
that someone always emerges. It never really goes uncontested.
Right.
So it kind of seeks its own equilibrium to a certain degree.
That's very true.
And, like, because of that, we now have this crazy situation where in a bunch of left-leaning states, Bernie Sanders is, like, almost caught up with Hillary Clinton in these straw polls that we're seeing coming out of.
Right.
Like, there was one in Wisconsin at the Democratic Party convention. Clinton won, but 49 to 41.
Right. This was headlines today, big time.
This was, like, big shock to people.
It was a huge shock.
Because we talk about Bernie Sanders, and we talk about him the way that I think, you know, a lot of people talked about Zephyr Teachout in that New York Democratic primary, where we knew that she was polling much higher than we really expected her to be. She was polling much higher than challengers generally do in those primaries. But, like, we also knew she wasn't really going to win that election. We just knew that it would have an impact because...
Right.
And, like, that's sort of what we're seeing here is people are kind of like, well... We need to have an impact.
Right.
So suddenly we're seeing Bernie Sanders, like, who we thought was irrelevant, ultimately, you know, when he announced, I think everyone thought he would be irrelevant in a sort of Kucinich-ish way, where, like, we know left people would be happy to vote for him, but, like, would anyone else? And we're seeing him really, like, capturing the excitement of a whole swath of voters who feel totally unrepresented by Hillary Clinton.
Well, and that's the thing that I think is important, because, you know, we sort of, like, poo-pooed a straw poll recently, I think, of the Republican candidates because it was one where Ben Carson had won.
Straw polls are not the most statistically relevant
they are
things.
Not. However, I think that what you can point to, specifically in this, even more so in the Ben Carson one, because what you've really now narrowed it down to two people here. And that is, I think, one of the things that is important about this. There are a few things that are important here. One of them is that he is now the clear second place person. It was Clinton 49, Sanders 41, and then a bunch of people like at 3
right,
and
like
2
O'Malley
and
1. Got 3%, Webb got 2%, Chafee got 1%, Biden's not running, but he got 3%.
Right.
So currently, by the way, Biden is polling the highest of all the other contenders, and he's not running.
Exactly. And there is, you know, the Sanders himself and all of his aides are sort of talking about what they call the restive progressive base.
Right.
And it's basically the people who they want to speak to that they see as a growing coalition of progressives who sort of feel disenfranchised by the Obama administration. They are untrustworthy of Hillary Clinton. And that group is, as we just saw with the polls that we talked about with Hillary, that is a growing group.
It's also always been a base in the Democrat. Those are their base voters in the Democratic Party. And for years, the Democrats have been trying to capture the middle so hard that they've often left the base out. So this was a coalition that I think was just, like, waiting to happen because... Yeah. You know, I think what Obama proved, not because, you know, he was running pretty far to the right, but he was an exciting candidate, and so he captured a lot of Democratic excitement, and because of that, a lot of people came to the polls.
Right.
There are all of these far-left voters who don't vote because there's no one to vote for, or kind of, like, vote in, like, funny write-in ways or whatever they do, who I think are kind of, like, it's becoming a larger proportion of the party because the rest of the party's moved so far to the
right
that it's ultimately becoming who the original Democrats were representing.
Right.
You know, not the original, like, slavery time Democrats, but the original of our modern Democrats.
Right.
But so I feel like it's a coalition that's growing, and it's also, like, a really active caucus. Yes. Like, that's who kind of, like, helps activate voters for someone like Obama.
Right.
Is this sort of left base.
Right.
And so Sanders is basically correctly identified that, like, because of the way this transition happened, that base didn't feel even sort of, like, loyalty to the kind of presiding candidate. Normally the base just ends up feeling loyalty to whoever's running because they want to win. They're not really feeling loyalty to a coronated winner. So there's all this room for him to grab them.
I agree. And you and I have always said, and I still stand by this, the only person who is going to be able to beat her, if there is any chance at doing so, is the type of candidate who is, like, a real movement candidate. And he is that type of candidate. So I think that if he can really truly be, like, the second person who is there with her and can really sort of, like, get this going, I mean, so many things have to be right for him to
also,
make this happen.
Regardless, this should scare the living daylights out of her.
Right.
Because this is really concerning. She is like part of the sort of ruling family of the Democratic Party. If anyone should feel that they have the loyalty of Democratic voters, it's Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And she has never had them.
Right.
She doesn't have them. These are voters who didn't like Clinton that much to begin
with.
Bill Clinton that much to begin with. There are there are a lot of voters on the left. We're seeing a country that's moving left on social issues, and we're seeing a candidate who has reluctantly moved to the left after them.
Right.
You know, we're seeing a country that is moving to the left on foreign policy issues, I think, because everything that we've done has been just like a huge bungle in the Middle East. And so and she is not yet there with them. You know, we're seeing people who are moving far to the left on issues of corporatism.
Yeah.
You know, on corporate governance, on the ways in which
you're hearing Republicans talk about that now.
Rick Santorum is running his whole fucking campaign on that right now, basically. I mean, he's not framing it as a corporate issue because he's not crazy. He's still running a Republican primary. But I mean, populist economic issues are a winner with both parties right now. And like, she can't, that's the one thing that she'll never catch up on because she all of her credibility is derived from her ties to Wall Street. So,
and even to hear her speak about it, you can tell she's uncomfortable doing it.
Well, of course she's not. Like, her entire, like, career is premised on the support of Wall Street and the sort of advocacy of these sort of middle ground, you know, economic issues that don't actually benefit most Americans, but sound like they do because they're generally pro-business and Americans all think that they're business people, even though they're not. But I mean, people, and I credit Occupy with this, so sue me. People are really, like, a little bit more informed. And even the people that aren't informed are uninformed in different ways than they used to be.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people won't buy the lines that would sort of allow her to get away with this stuff. And Bernie Sanders, just like Liz Warren was expected to do and has been doing from her perch in the Senate, speaks like really clearly about these things and makes so much sense that it's hard to find your allegiance to her when you hear him saying things that are in opposition to her beliefs and make so much sense.
Like, well, and that's the thing, you know, we talked about how the fact that, like, you know, she's saying all of these things now and they're the right things to say, but she's said different things before. I mean, you can go back to the 80s and hear Bernie Sanders
talking about the same shit this whole time.
Talking about all the wealth going to the top 1%. Yeah. I mean, he's made a political career out of it. I mean, it's not disingenuous.
No.
He is sort of...
I've also this week was talking to a lot of people who were like, I like Bernie Sanders, but I don't know if he could win the general. And I was like, I think that he could more easily win the general than Hillary Clinton in certain respects. I think that his populist message could resonate.
I think so, too.
Really broadly.
Like, I just think that, you know,
I think that we have Huckabee and Santorum running in the Republican race right now. They both have bases.
Right.
Not big bases currently.
Right.
But, I mean, they have found bases in the past. Like,
these
are people that are distracting everyone by hating gays or whatever they're up to, hating women. But, I mean, ultimately, they're preaching the same type of economic message. He's just preaching it in a more sensical kind of way.
I agree. It's, yeah. So... anyway, and there are left-leaning states that have early-ish primaries. There was a recent poll where he got 24% in the state of Washington. Granted, she was at 50-something percent, but 24%. I mean, he's seeing an uptick. A lot of people are thinking that it's, like, Warren voters that are now sort of, like, have finally decided that she's not going to run.
There was a huge movement behind Warren, and she wasn't even planning to run.
Right. Exactly.
We were in denial about that for months.
People are looking for someone to support, and they found it now.
And I think that also he's someone who a lot of early states hate Hillary Clinton already.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean,
he's someone who couldn't. It's not like he couldn't win some of those early states. It's not as likely as him winning a far left state or whatever. But like, I'm not gonna say that like Iowa voters are gonna like go to the mat for Hillary Clinton. They don't like her. Like,
no, they don't
like her. Not going to go out of their way to support Hillary Clinton.
No.
They might accidentally do it.
Right.
But, like, that's not something that they're definitely going to set their minds to. So, like,
he
could potentially gain a pretty hefty percentage of that vote.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the people who voted for anyone other than Hillary Clinton in 2008 will happily vote for someone other than Hillary Clinton in 2016.
If there's someone else to vote for, they'll
like
do
the
it.
Person.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And we're talking about a caucus system where...
Right,
where
you can
your
literally
votes start
shout
to grow
someone into going in.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, and also where caucuses have to start merging with other caucuses, and if other people don't feel like merging with Hillary because they specifically didn't want to vote for her, then you've got, you know, a sort of interesting situation on your
hands.
Yeah,
in a caucus situation here, you would think that you could believe that at least the 3% who voted for O'Malley, some of the people who were voting for Biden, and... some of the
zero people are going to vote for Jim Webb, so let's not even. And Lincoln Chafee is also a zero voter.
Would like, have you're basically tied at this point.
Yeah,
basically, you know, in that if that was a caucus system,
so, it's exciting stuff, guys.
It is. Yeah.
Math is exciting. And less exciting news: the Bidens like cannot catch a break.
So
Joe Biden
sad.
Has like the world's most tragic life. He gets to be vice president, but all his children die.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
his first wife
and their
his
infant.
Their infant in 1972 died in a car accident, and his and Beau, who
his strapping oldest son,
right, who was everyone thought destined for great things,
right?
Just
he
died
was the,
last week.
The attorney general in Delaware,
right?
Or had been,
right?
Yeah, died of brain
just
cancer.
Died of brain cancer last week.
Like, you know, you shouldn't have to get car accidents and brain cancer.
God.
That's too many things.
No, you shouldn't have to bury two children from two, you know,
no.
40 years apart from each other.
In, like, just... like tragic circumstances.
Ugh, so sad.
It's the worst.
So Obama eulogized him, said a lot of great words, you know.
Fancy people were in attendance.
Hugged Biden, you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway.
And also, oddly, Chris Martin of Coldplay played the funeral.
Sure.
I don't
Apparently he'd heard that
Beau liked
his
music.
So he offered to come. So
nice.
There you go.
But in any case, poor Joe Biden.
Sad.
I mean, when's this guy gonna get together?
Yeah.
Okay. Now moving on to happy news.
Yeah.
A new person has taken over the Harkin Steak Fry tradition.
That's right.
We have long Harkin Steak Fry, a sort of important democratic or must you know, a must be democratic event, a must be seen democratic event,
yeah,
whatever
right.
you call it.
And he was
I don't know words anymore.
He was a senator.
I'm too excited about
she
this.
Joni Ernst now
took,
has his
took
seat.
Took his seat.
Right.
And so she has started her own steak fry, which she is calling the Roast and Ride.
Mm.
So as we know, Joni Ernst loves her motorcycles.
That's right.
And loves castrating pigs. So I guess roast is involved in that somehow.
Sure.
So in any case, it went really well for her. Very prominent guest list. A lot of top state officials. Terry Branstad was there.
Yeah.
The lieutenant governor, Kim Reynolds, was also there.
Uh-huh.
They sent out, you know, they solicited people to come to the event.
Right.
And then we also had a number of 2016ers. Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, Rick Perry, Ben Carson, Lindsey Graham, Carly Fiorina, and Mike Huckabee all showed up.
Wow.
That's impressive.
That is.
They were all given 8 minutes to address everyone. The speeches were sort of like so-so, but then they also like schmoozed a lot.
Yes.
But so... Part of this event was a 38-mile ride from Des Moines to Boone, Iowa, which was the, you know, middle of nowhere town that they threw this thing in.
Truly.
The only person of those candidates who joined Joni Ernst for this ride was Scott Walker.
Right, so he really won.
Yeah, he wore a leather Harley-Davidson jacket and motorcycle gloves and Harley-Davidson boots.
Yeah, he's
so
a big
he really
Harley
dressed
enthusiast.
The part. That's horrifying to me. Also, gross quotes just abounded and at every turn.
Yep.
Scott Walker said, I love a senator who knows how to castrate a pig, ride a hog, and cut the pork from Washington, D.C. That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsey Graham took the cake for disgusting, creepy things to say when he said, Joni rocks. She promised to make people in Washington squeal. They're squealing, mainly the men.
Ugh.
Ew!
Gross.
Oh, God! And he was apparently just telling, like, one joke after another. I hope they were not all this disgusting, because that's horrifying to me.
Yeah.
Interesting theme, though. Jeb Bush was not in attendance.
No,
and Marco
obviously.
Rubio and Scott Walker both were laying in heavy on the Bush-hating slash dynasty-hating.
That's right.
Which is a convenient talking point that allows both of them to both hate Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So they're really double winning. Marco Rubio really has the most to gain from doing this, because people are often like, we have a Florida person. We don't need you. Also, he's like... If this is possible, like, comes across as, like, a little dumber than Jeb Bush.
Right.
As hard as that is to believe.
Yeah.
But he said, if we keep promoting the same people, we get the same results, and the future leaves us behind. Then he also made a weird turn where he said, you know, people have been hitting him, I guess, because he just doesn't have as much money as the other candidates. So he said, the latest one is that I shouldn't run for president because I'm not rich enough. And it's true, I don't make millions from speeches, and I don't have a family foundation that's raised billions, a lot of it from foreign donations.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife and I work to ensure that we have enough money to send our kids to a Christian education at a private school. First of all, I would like to go on the record as saying that no one who is currently in higher office or any public office should be advocating for sending your kids,
to private school. I know.
This infuriates me. I don't think you should be allowed to send your kids to private school if you are being paid by the U.S. government to represent...
You go to public school. Yeah.
...American people. I just, like, this... And, like, okay, I get that they're all secretly doing it because they're all rich, but, like, certainly that's not a reason that you're... that shows that you work hard and that you're qualified to be president and that Americans should respect you.
I know.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
It's, like, infuriating to me. But Walker, Scott Walker, also kind of dinged Jeb Bush slash Hillary Clinton, I guess, on the family dynasty thing. Carly Fiorina delivered her usual slate of zingers against Clinton, and they were well-received, but not anything special. But then they all kind of, like, schmoozed down in their tents. They all had tents set up, and they were, like, giving out swag and, like, schmoozing with everyone. Apparently, Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, and Rick Perry were the most mobbed as they worked the crowds. Rubio was ribbed by somebody because he has a kind of, like, suspect driving record.
Oh, yeah, that just got released recently.
Yeah, that got released recently. And so someone made a reference to it, and he said, well, you don't live in Florida, which, fair enough. Driving in Florida is pretty scary.
That's right.
But then he was, like, carving up meat. Scott Walker was, like, flipping pork chops. And Rick Perry spent the entire time surrounded by, like, an entourage of veterans and bikers.
Oh, boy. This sounds like the world's worst event.
Worst. And then Carly Fiorina was, like, doing some picture posing after her speech. Hanging out. Apparently, Joni Ernst has no plans to endorse any of these people or anyone, but wants to become sort of like the... This is really raising her profile in the Democratic Party in a very impressive way.
Republican Party.
I mean, the Republican Party in a very impressive way.
Yeah.
Like, she... I as disgusting as this is, like, I sort of have to give it to her for kind of making this thing a reality.
Yeah.
She's really living the dream.
Totally.
She's taking the Hargan tradition and bastardizing it in the best way she knows how. And doing that by allowing people to make disgusting castrating pig and motorcycle jokes at her expense.
That's it. So she's that they done can it.
Shower her with praise to make Iowa voters love her. I mean,
that's right.
She's done it.
Yep.
She did it.
Oh, God.
She, I will say, of all of the people that have been given this kind of, you know, this kind of stature out of the blue in the Republican Party, she's handling it best.
Sure.
This happened. Sarah Palin was showered with sudden attention from Republicans. She didn't handle it well at all. She would have fucked this up completely. Like, I feel like Joni Ernst, she delivered the response. It was boring. She had the little that weird anecdote about putting bread bags in her shoes or whatever. But ultimately, she's uneventful. Stupid. She didn't take a sip of water or anything crazy like forget to look at the camera.
Right.
I mean, she's like really, she's really doing it.
Yeah.
It's a little disturbing to me.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Bruce Braley.
Ugh.
You deserve this.
God, you sure do.
Yeah,
I hope he's back to obscurity permanently.
Permanently, yeah. In other news that is the actual news of the week.
Right. We told you we buried it, and here it is.
Here it is. Finally getting to it. In the South Carolina police officer that was part of that shooting in April where he, like, tried to, like, give the taser or, like, plant a taser on the black guy that he
killed. Who was running away from him. Right, exactly.
And who he shot in the back.
Yeah.
Was indicted by
a grand jury indictment.
Finally, success. We're getting those. It's like, it took a long time. It's like pulling teeth to get, you know, grand jury indictments of these people who we've caught on video killing people. But here we are. Finally going to see a trial. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And then there was also this video that was making its way around the web.
Oh, God.
This, like, crazy cop who, like, broke up, like, a teen pool party in McKinney, Texas, and, like, pulled a gun. And then, like, also, like, kneeled on this girl's back.
Yeah,
like,
no, it was terrible.
And then when
the police officers, like, ran away, like, one of them, like, dramatically somersaulted and, like, did you see that? Like,
that.
It was, like, the most ridiculous, dumb police officer move, as if, like, I'm, like, he was trying to...
I'm in an action movie. I should somersault here.
It was totally unnecessary. But, yeah, and the kids are all just sort of like, dude, we're just at a pool party, like, leave us alone.
Here's what's happened. There's a group of teen girls at a pool. And apparently they don't all have passes. But of course, they're only at, like, everyone sort of, like, acknowledged that they were only asking them for passes because they were black. And there were all of these white teenage girls hanging out who were being just as rowdy, who were not being asked for passes.
Yeah.
So then a group of black teenage boys comes up. And suddenly everyone decides that those groups are together.
Right.
Just because they're all black, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
They didn't know each other, though. It was just two separate groups of teenagers who happened to descend on a pool in a public pool at the same time.
That's right.
And So it got rowdy and the police got called.
Yeah.
And then only black teenagers got blamed.
That's right. That's exactly
what happened.
And he pulled his gun, too.
Yeah, and he pulled his gun.
Yeah. And he has not been fired, by the way. He's on administrative leave.
Yeah. This is a cop who's probably not going to get fired for pulling his gun on unarmed teenagers at a pool party.
Yikes.
Like, guys.
Anyway.
Jobs numbers.
Oh, yes.
So you can just tune out for this section.
That's right.
These aren't real.
Shut it up.
But
shut
I would
down.
Tune back in because we have some great stories coming up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The end of this podcast is really going to
bring it home.
We're bringing it home this time. Uh-huh. Yeah. We got 280,000 jobs in May.
Yay.
Maybe.
Yes. Figures for short-term unemployment and the labor market dropouts also fell significantly.
Great.
The unemployment rate is 5.5%, which is unchanged.
Right. We're gaining jobs in healthcare, retail sales, and tourism.
Yes. And we did have good wage gains. That was sort of
which is the only thing that matters in these numbers currently.
Correct. They're, because the numbers themselves are fake, as we tell you every month.
They change
now,
every month.
For over 3 years, we've been telling you this. And but that is a good sign, because that is what everyone has been sort of waiting for. We can talk about what the unemployment rate is
until
the end of time, but it's like once people have jobs where they still can't feed themselves, like
that's not a helpful kind of job to have.
That's the problem. So this is what we need. So if there's, screw however many jobs we supposedly did or did not add last month, let's have that be our takeaway here.
Yeah.
Not what the unemployment rate is. It's irrelevant.
2.3% wage increase.
Yeah. So, good work.
Good work, guys.
Now, and also, it is the 56th consecutive month of job gains, which is the longest stretch on record since they've basically been keeping track of monthly job gains. So, that's another good, solid takeaway.
But if there's one thing we know from the fake numbers, it's that we've been gaining jobs.
Correct.
We don't know how many jobs. Nope. We've been gaining some jobs.
Sometimes we're off by literally a third.
Right.
Of what,
we're
estimate is.
We're not losing jobs. We're gaining jobs.
Correct.
That's what we know.
That's right.
We're gaining population, too. I don't know how the math works out there, but I've always been suspect of these job gains.
There's probably inflation situations going on.
We're definitely suffering from inflation.
Right.
But at we know for sure that whatever the numbers say, we are gaining jobs. That's the takeaway.
That's right.
Other important news that we buried.
We are also losing...
We are losing...
The Patriot
parts
Act.
Of the Patriot Act.
That's right.
We brought this to you in the last podcast, but that was 2 weeks ago.
Right.
The Senate was just about to go on vacation, having not settled on any sort of Patriot Act renewal, because Rand Paul was all...
Hero Rand Paul.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rand Paul was like really up to his business. Yeah. First of all, before we go into this, the Patriot Act is an acronym. Did you guys know that? Brent brought this to my attention today, and it is the most ridiculous acronym in the history of people
I don't know what
acronyms.
Made me remember this, but...
Something inspired you, because...
It did.
We just... I feel like before we get into the story, let's read you what the acronym actually means. Okay, USA Patriot Act. Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism.
There it is.
At least two of those words are unnecessary.
USA Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Or USA Patriot.
USA Patriot.
For. Yeah.
Right. Act
that's
is
it.
The name of the act.
Right.
So that's what it stands for.
Come on, guys.
This is...
That is the epitome of like...
Absurd.
Yeah.
It's stupid. I don't have a better word for it.
Nope,
it's ridiculous.
That's it. It's dumb.
And I would argue that... Having to fit the word patriot has made this much more cumbersome of a descriptor than it needs to be, because this means nothing.
Truly.
It means nothing. That's a sentence that doesn't mean anything. It has extra words in it that don't need to be there.
Yeah.
That are just there
it's
because
like
they have R's in them and stuff.
Words. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In any case, the Patriot Act expired,
as
we expected it to. And there were three key sections that expired that are kind of like the controversial sections. The Patriot Act had sunset provisions for these things. So it was set up so that these specific provisions would expire unless they were renewed.
Right.
Now, everyone is now acting like we've lost to the terrorists if we don't renew these things.
Correct.
But these are also things that are related to the Snowden leaks that Americans are very suspicious of at the moment.
Right.
There's the lone wolf provision, which allows U.S. intelligence to monitor individual people, even if they don't have terrorist affiliation.
Right.
It's never been used, and it's only allowable against non-citizens, but it's still something that troubles people greatly because...
Obviously.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The roving wiretaps, where we could just sort of, like, wiretap whoever on multiple devices.
Yep.
This was supposed to prevent terrorists and criminals from, like, using burner phones or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, like, gave them carte blanche to, like, be wiretapping whoever for whatever fake suspect reason.
Right.
And then Section 212, which is, I think, the one we're most familiar with, which is the bulk data collection. 215.
Sorry.
Can't read numbers. Which is the bulk data collection.
Right.
That was the sort of crux of that Snowden controversy.
Yeah.
So in any case, the Senate voted 77-17 to advance a bill that would end the bulk data collection.
Yep.
But as we know, Rand Paul's been... blocking up a storm, so these provisions have not currently been reinstated. They were going to expire. We were going to be everyone was talking about how going a few days without these things was going to ruin lives and let the terrorists win. But a lot of people are sort of being like, Rand Paul's just running for president, he's being an idiot, but those people also can't be trusted, so it's like hard to know what you think here. But so they do have the USA Freedom Act, which is, I guess, the sort of renewal act.
Right.
Well, that this is, includes changes to these
correct.
Programs.
Well, and this is the one that the House passed. And this is already, the one the House passed. Bipartisan.
Right.
And the Senate and could not.
The Senate get couldn't passed. Get it through.
Right. Exactly.
So in any case, that's where we are.
There it is. They've expired.
They've expired.
They're gone.
Currently, they haven't unexpired yet. So
that's right.
Currently, we're, I guess, without bulk data collection or are attempting to reinstate it through some bill that Rand Paul will filibuster. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But that's what's going on currently. So
that's right.
Rand Paul delivered.
Good work.
There he is.
Rand Did Paul it. For the win.
Rand Paul for the win. That's right.
Yeah.
It's so rare that you get to say that. Here we are.
I know.
meanwhile, in an update that is sure to rock your world. Megyn Kelly. People used to call her Megyn Kelly, and then we all switched to Megyn Kelly.
Oh, they did? Well, she's got a dumb spelling.
She's got a dumb
name.
Spelling in her name. We'll go with Megyn Kelly, I guess.
Megyn,
I always want to say Megyn Kelly, and then I feel stupid because I know we're all calling her Megyn Kelly.
Well, whatever.
Whatever.
We can call her whatever the hell we want.
That's right.
We can call
Megyn
her...
Kelly interviewed the Duggar parents, and then the Duggar kids. The
that's right.
Duggar kindred.
Two-part Duggar...
Duggarkin.
Extravaganza blowout interview with Megyn Kelly.
It begins on June 3rd on the Kelly file. With Jim, Bob, and Michelle, who kind of talked through what had happened with their son Josh when he was sexually harassing their daughters.
Like, was like some over the blanket sleep touching, supposedly.
Until they admitted that it wasn't. Like, what was so weird about this is they go on and on about how it's no big deal and they dealt with it the way that they, you know, he's just a dumb teenager.
Yeah.
And then they kind of like throw in, and in a couple of instances, under the clothes, but only for a few seconds.
Ah, yes. Only for a few seconds. He just had to get under the hood for just a second.
That's right.
See what was going on down there.
So what happens is that in 2002, Josh approaches them in tears and admits that he's been inappropriately touching what turns out to be his sisters.
Sure. Tears. He knew. He was just
He knew that it was wrong. And they didn't know it had happened because they'd been asleep, which is the best time to molest someone, I guess, when you're
obviously
living
That's
in a house.
I do all my best
exactly.
molesting.
So, and they were also too young to really, like, fully comprehend what had happened to them, because at the time, we know that Jill and Jessa were two of the victims.
Right.
And at the time, Jill was 12, and Jessa was, like, 9 or 10. And we assume that the other kids who were in and around that age, whose names, Jana, or, you know,
Joanna.
Whatever, Joanna, whatever they all have the same name, so it's hard to know. There were four sisters that were that
Isn't
were
there a molested. Joanna and a Joanna?
Yes. That's a true story.
That. Thank you.
There's a Joy Hannah or something. Like, there's so many combinations of the same name that it's... And then there's also people whose names shouldn't be starting with J's, but do, like Ginger, who I believe was also one of the victims, actually.
Oh, no.
In any case, Jim Bob claims he put safeguards in place to protect his daughters. Mm. But then Josh comes to them again, twice, admitting that he's done it again.
Oh, God.
So after the third incident, because it took three times for them to take this seriously... They remove him from the home and put him in this, like, weird work camp that is not a treatment program for this sort of thing and in no way has a track record of fixing these
Christian
behavioral problems.
Weirdness.
But Jim Bob stresses that this was not rape. He just touched them over the clothes. And then that's when he admits that he had actually also been touching them under the clothes.
Right.
But only for a few seconds, guys.
That's right.
So that's they take him to an unlicensed Christian-based counselor.
Right. Where they also took him to that...
To the police officer who's now serving 56 years for child pornography.
Correct.
And claims that they didn't tell him the extent of the problem. He's blaming them for not telling him the extent of the problem.
Oh, boy.
And they are saying that he's lying, but who knows what's going on. Megyn Kelly did ask Jim Bob why he agreed to go on television and subject his family to this kind of scrutiny if he knew that this was sort of like buried as a skeleton in their closet. And he said that the records were sealed, so he didn't see why TLC would ever find out about this or why anyone would find out about this.
Forgetting that
people have ways of finding out about things in public.
Well, and that I think is interesting because after we sort of had the initial craziness with this whole story in the first place, I think we are now sort of like starting to get to, you know, how these people ended up on television in the first place.
Yeah.
Because, you know, TLC has obviously now had a couple instances of this. And like, how do we know who the people are that we are putting on television? And there are a lot of questions, and I am giving them credence anyway, as to whether TLC did
know about this. Yeah.
And
well,
there
it
are
seems
a lot of
there's
people,
been rumors about it for years.
There are a lot of people who think that they did.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me if they did.
No. Well, and this is, by the way, I mean, these specials started when TLC was sort of early in this style of programming that became their kind of hallmark.
Totally.
So they were building stars at a time that they didn't really even know if anyone was ever going to watch this programming.
Well, right, exactly.
You know, this is back when they're doing the what are those dwarf specials that they used to do?
Oh, yeah, Little People.
They're
like World's Smallest Person or whatever.
I can't remember what they're called, but they're like the world's smallest.
Oh, yeah,
The world's smallest kind people. Of dwarfism, yes. Uh-huh. Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But this is back when they're doing sort of pseudo-medical specials.
Right.
And like pseudo-lifestyle specials.
Totally.
And so I think probably at the time, they might have known about this and thought to themselves, meh. Not realizing that this would become this huge franchise for them.
Right.
You know? This is back when 14 and Counting, or 14 and Pregnant Again, was a one-off special that they were doing.
Right.
It wasn't like a television series.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if TLC knew about it, and it just sort of like...
Right. They didn't... Never, there was never a concern.
There was never a concern, because they just never thought that this would become... This kind of stardom didn't exist yet. So they didn't know what would happen.
Yeah.
Not that I'm excusing them, but I feel like I could see a world in which they knew.
Yeah.
For sure.
I agree.
But in any case, I love also, by the way, Megyn Kelly asked Michelle how she could conduct a robocall warning that transgender people could be child molesters when her own son was, in fact, a child molester.
Yeah.
And she said, I think that protecting young girls and not allowing young men and men in general to go into a girl's locker room is just common sense. Letting your teenage son molest your daughters by going into their bedroom at night and touching them. Over and under the clothes.
Yeah.
Is not common sense, evidently. Or,
correct.
You know, that's common sense dictates that you should just allow that.
That's right.
But in any case, when asked why they did not send him to a facility that helps people actually deal with these issues, they said they wanted to, quote, reach his heart first.
Oh, I see.
So kind. But in any case, I mean, I can't imagine that no one knew about this because the girls were in therapy and he was in therapy after this.
Right.
They all were in therapy.
Yeah.
So why would four of the daughters need to be in therapy for it? In this kind of family, I don't imagine that a lot of therapy is going on usually.
Zero therapy.
Zero therapy is going on. Mm-hmm. With a licensed therapist, at least. A lot of pseudo-Christian therapy, I'm sure, is going on. But
totally.
Not this kind of therapy. But so, in any case, they claim that they enforced new boundaries by separating the girls' and boys' rooms on opposite ends of their massive sprawling estate.
Right.
And instituting new rules like no hide-and-seek and no sitting on big boys' laps.
Oh, God.
Ugh.
Yikes.
God.
You want to know the other thing that has been annoying me about the story so much recently is that the comparisons that now all of the people who are, you know, because there are people on the right who are now coming to their defense.
Right.
And talking about, like, how it's just the liberal media who are, you know, really just shaming them and, you know, and people are comparing it to the whole Lena Dunham situation.
I am not surprised to hear that. I haven't, but I'm not surprised.
And that just... That is so frustrating to me because, I mean, it just couldn't be further from the same thing.
Yeah, it's I know. And I am not surprised to hear that that's happening.
Yeah.
And I also think that that speaks to the degree, to the sense that people really don't understand why what he did was wrong.
Correct.
In the far right.
Right.
Which is troubling on a whole other level.
Right.
Like, it sort of means that they don't understand the situation.
Right. Because she was four and wanting to look at her sister's vagina, which
right.
is not the same thing.
Not the same
people.
Thing. And by the way, I mean, like, lived in a house where her parents were artists who, like, paint nudes and things like that. Like, it's a very different kind of environment as well. Like, this is a kind of much less empowered environment.
It's too stupid to
It's too, but I
to
mean.
Give breath to.
Yeah, I'm not surprised those comparisons are being made. I'm annoyed because it means that they don't fully understand what happened here
exactly.
and why it was so troubling. But
anyway.
Jill and Jessa also sat for an interview with Megyn Kelly on the
5th,
on Friday, and which got huge ratings, by the way. All of these got really big ratings, so Megyn Kelly's really killing it right now.
Yeah.
These interviews are so sad. Like, because you can tell that they're not really comfortable with what happened to them and not
well,
really
and they're all dead
over
inside
it,
anyway.
And they're, like, they never really can fully defend him in the way that you expect the Duggars to. They, like, you can tell that they don't really trust him or feel comfortable about this.
Of course
not. As they should not.
No,
but I mean, like, they're being sort of paraded around to, like, show that the Duggars made it out fine. And, like, you can tell they're not fine.
Right.
And that they're kind of in this, like, weird machine now. Where, and I can understand why, like, understandably for them, this is, like, a terrible circumstance to have gotten this kind of media attention.
Yeah.
Because this is very unfair to them as having to be named as victims publicly this way. But it's also just like a really like depressing, horrible thing to kind of like watch them kind of tiptoe around the point. Like at one point, Jill says, there's a difference between forgiveness, because they're asked about how she moves on, or she's asked about how she moved on. She said, there's a difference between forgiveness and trust. You forgive someone and then you have to have boundaries. Just like, yeah. In any case. So then I like also Jessa talks about how InTouch is a major porn provider.
I know. Yeah, because like, that's who released the, that's who got a hold of court documents.
That's, that's not what's wrong with InTouch magazine, Jessa. plenty of things are, but that's not it.
Exactly. You've, that's not it. No.
It's not even a British tabloid. They don't even have topless photos in there.
I know.
It's useless.
Yeah.
In any case, now we get to the very important news.
Oh, God.
This was a crazy, crazy last 2 weeks. For one thing, a sinkhole swallowed a police car in Colorado.
So upsetting.
Sinkholes are just eating police cars. They're the policeman had to climb out the top. But the police car's gone. It's a write-off now.
It's just, but he got out?
He got out.
God, how? If the car
He climbed out of the roof.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That is amazing.
That's not what you want.
He should be commended.
I know. He's a hero.
But that is... No.
I don't
like sinkholes swallowing.
But if that wasn't bad enough, there was a house in Maryland that got a snake infestation.
This is...
This is the absolute worst.
No.
Black snakes and rat snakes. Rat snakes? Well, that sounds horrifying. What is that? I don't know.
I mean, all the snakes they are eat horrifying. Rats. But, like, rat snakes?
I know. Oof. We're living in the walls of this couple's home.
No, they weren't.
They absolutely were. They were killing them with a machete. Finally,
The
couple was, because they started finding snakes in their house, and they had a historic machete of some sort that was on display.
Wouldn't you call someone before you just start with the machete?
So they're seeing
machete?
Snakes, and I guess they're not like thinking like, oh, we have an infestation. I don't know what they're thinking. As soon as I see a snake, I'm out. But
I'm done. I have moved at that point.
Well... So in any case, experts came in and told them, basically, that they would have to vacate the house for 10 years because the snake pheromones would be active for 10 years, which meant that even if they got rid of the current snakes, the pheromones would continue to attract snakes. So they would never get rid of the snakes.
10 years to get rid of the snakes?
So this house, they had to tear out all the walls. I know.
Oh, God.
They had to tear out all the walls and then leave for 10 years. To avoid snakes eating their poor toddler or infant or whatever. They had a very small baby that could have been eaten by snakes at any moment.
Oh, my God.
I mean, snake infestations? Are they serious?
In Maryland, too, of all places. Like, this is not Florida.
No. Right. You hear about a snake infestation in Florida. You're like, well, you were living in Florida. I mean, you should have known.
Yeah.
Like, an alligator infestation. It's like, some things are happening in Florida that you just expect.
Right.
But in Maryland?
Oh, God.
Maryland, you don't think of as the kind of state that has snake infestations or...
Yeah.
Any kind of natural occurrences like this.
Oh, God.
That's horrifying.
Yikes.
And that really makes you feel like you could be vulnerable to this anywhere.
That's what I don't like about this
Like,
at all.
What's to stop snakes in Iowa from doing this if snakes in Maryland are doing this?
Or now? Are
or
they
Or snakes
here?
In California, right? Are we in a snake-infested house right now? We have no way of knowing.
No.
I feel like our only way of knowing in California is that
I
mostly...
do know that I might not be able to sleep tonight.
Right, exactly. We're going to be vigilant, that's for sure.
Right.
If I see a snake... Right. I'll see it immediately. I mean,
do we need to get an antique machete?
I mean, we might.
To protect ourselves?
I wouldn't be surprised. In any case, that's horrifying. Also horrifying is basically everything Mike Huckabee's been saying recently.
Mike Huckabee's got the jokes, people.
He's got jokes. If you thought it was hilarious when Michelle Duggar thought that trans people shouldn't be allowed in bathrooms, you'll think it's even more hilarious when Mike Huckabee makes a joke about why he doesn't think this should happen.
Yeah.
For one thing... He was speaking at the 2015 National Religious Broadcasters Convention, which is a thing. So that's the first thing, is that that's a thing.
Yep.
His speech got posted on World Daily Net over the weekend, although this happened weeks ago. And in the speech, he is talking about transgender people being allowed to use the bathroom of the gender they identify with instead of the gender that they were born with, and says that he wishes he was young again so that he could pretend to be transgender and go shower in the girls' locker room.
I mean... Come on. I also don't know why he's getting involved in this. I know this is sort of like a...
Hot button issue with the crazies.
With the crazies, but like, I really feel like he could find his footing in this primary without the crazies.
I know.
And I'm disappointed in him because we thought that he was going to do better. I know. And he's not doing it.
There's like, there's two sides of Mike Huckabee.
Right.
And one of them is the correct side, and one of them is the incorrect side for him to go with in this race. Right.
He's going with
the wrong
one.
He's a populist. Great. He's predicted a wave that has finally come.
He was early, folksy charmer.
He was early on that wave, and if he had stuck with it, I think he would have a real, you know, a real sort of group in this primary that would be into it. Instead, he went
with
the
bigotry. He's too busy being insane.
Yes. Right. Being insane is not the answer. There's enough people doing that. There's not room for you in this primary if you're just going to be insane.
Right.
There's room for a populist, because unlike when Rick Santorum says populist things, people will believe you because you've been saying them for years.
That's right.
Anyway, let's read the whole quote, because it's just like a funny quote.
Yeah.
For those who do not think that we are under threat, simply recognize that the fact that we are now in city after city watching ordinances say that your 7-year-old daughter, if she goes into the restroom, cannot be offended, and you can't be offended if she's greeted there by a 42-year-old man who feels more like a woman than he does a man. Now, I wish that someone had told me that when I was in high school. That I could have felt more like a woman when it came time to take showers in PE. I'm pretty sure that I would have found my feminine side and said, Coach, I think I'd rather shower with the girls today. I mean,
just
with this.
Ignorance.
And this is not the first time he's dragged this chestnut out, by the way. Every time he talks about transgender law, he tells this dumb story.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
This
is not the first time.
No.
Also, another gem from Mike Huckabee. He started off a January radio bulletin for his broadcast lamenting that The Sun, which is a British tabloid, is going to stop doing their page 3 feature where they have, like, topless or women or whatever it is. Because, you know, they've gotten pressure, I think, from women's groups to stop objectifying them this way.
Yeah.
But so in any case, he juxtaposed this with a campaign that has been sort of spreading around the web that about women wanting the right to go topless, which is legal in a lot of places because men are allowed to do it. And a lot of celebrity women have kind of taken up the cause and like taken topless photos of themselves. And
Chelsea Handler, Miley Cyrus have both done this. Yeah.
So in any case, he's talking about this and has a solution to this problem, which is that we should all just put shirts on because, you know, he doesn't want to see any more man boobs either.
Doesn't want man boobs.
No.
No. So just get rid of all of the boobs, whether they belong to men, women, children, animals. He's probably going to want all
the animals to be fully clothed as well, too. Yeah.
Like, let's not be seeing any private parts.
No.
Of any living thing.
No, exactly.
Because it's just too much temptation.
Or public parts.
Right.
Why stop? Yeah. Why stop with shirts?
Yeah.
What if we just had to wear hats, too, or something? I mean, there's so many. You can go anywhere from this point. But so, he advocates just tell the men to put on a damn shirt when they go out in public.
That's right.
So we can stop this lunacy of women thinking that they shouldn't have to wear shirts.
God. Put on a top, for God's sake, everybody.
And in most important news.
Oh, boy.
Should we be allowing Mike Huckabee to be a parent?
No.
Because things aren't going so well for his kids.
No.
John Mark Huckabee, who is his oldest son, took down a video this week called Charlie Muse, which is a low-budget film in which he was acting and plays a chain-smoking, sleazy businessman who is sexually harassing an aspiring actress with lines such as, you gotta have a thick skin and a willingness to do whatever it takes to succeed, and do you not think there's an A-list actor out there who's never had to show some tit or suck a little dick to get a part? You know what I mean, sweet cheeks? This is his gross, gross, gross oldest son.
It's so foul. Did you watch this?
Yeah.
First off, he's
it's so just weird.
Like, he's a disgusting creature.
Right.
This guy.
Right. He's gross.
I mean, he's just foul.
Yeah. He has gross facial hair.
Gross facial hair.
Like he's just being creepy.
He has gross facial hair that is on a gross face.
Right.
So it's compounding his grossness. It's like exponential amounts of gross. Right. It's like grossness on grossness.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
No. And to say that this film is low budget is...
Right. Is unfairly comparing it to films that have been produced with no budget.
Correct.
Uh-huh. And this is like a camcorder effort.
Big time.
By the way, he went to the Arkansas Film Institute. Is that a thing?
Nope.
No, not a thing.
Certainly, it's not an acting school.
No.
I can guarantee you that much.
No, for sure. It doesn't sound like a production school either. It doesn't sound like any kind of film-related school. But also, so that's what's happening with his oldest son.
Yeah.
But his other sons have also been up to suspect activities. First of all, Huckabee himself has been up to suspect activities because he played bass alongside Ted Nugent in Cat Scratch Fever, is not, I wouldn't think, meets the moral standards that someone like Mike Huckabee sets out for people.
I would not think so.
His younger son, David Huckabee, was fired as a Boy Scout counselor when he was 17 because he hung a stray dog from a tree after it wandered into the camp where he was working. Then 9 years later, he pleaded guilty to misdemeanor after bringing a loaded Glock in his carry-on bag to the Little Rock Airport.
I mean, come on. You can't do that.
Mike Huckabee called it one of those stupid things.
Ah, sure.
Just one of the dumb things.
That's right. It certainly was one of the dumb things. Sure.
The best quote from this article, though, is that Huckabee declined to comment on his son's film credits, but he's previously criticized President Barack Obama for allowing his teenage daughters to listen to music by pop star Beyonce.
Right.
Like, there were so many things that were just, like, self-explanatory about... Like, and also in this article, which is from Raw Story, it says that his acting style can best be described as strenuous.
I'll say. Yeah.
That's the word, I guess. That's it. So that's the news this week.
That's right.
We are back on, we went long this time, but we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming and 1 hour podcast next week.
That's right.
And hopefully more people announce, because it's always great when people really get in there.
Let's get a Donald Trump announcement.
Oh my God. We can only hope. Fingers crossed.
Seriously.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.